Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who spent a day this week with his underpants the wrong way round. It's Richard Herring! Thank you very much. Hello. Thank you. Thank you very much. Hello. Welcome to Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was with the editorial team of Smut Magazine. Remember Smut Magazine, David? It came. Remember Zit Magazine? They were there as well. When Viz came out, there was lots of kind of Viz copy magazines that came out that weren't quite as good as Viz. Thought some more of you would remember, but you're all too young. Anyway, they call it Rahalastapas. I don't know if that's going to catch on. I did the Matt Ford show. He has like an 8-minute stand-up spot the other day. Well, yesterday, in fact, as we're recording this. And I had to write like an 8-minute monologue, and you know, and they had an autocue and stuff, and it was quite good. I thought I should probably do that in my actual show, shouldn't I? rather than just making stuff up, I should probably try and write a routine. So I sort of have, although first of all, I'm going to go into this. I've been arguing with Kettle Crisps as on Twitter. They got mentioned on Twitter, and then Kettle Chips, they said, came on, and they said, oh, I see you're having an argument about whether it's crisps or chips. Well, we're an American company, so when we came over, we called ourselves Kettle Chips. I said, no, you didn't. I said, well, we did. We are Kettle Chips. I said, no, you're Kettle Crisps. I think I would know. They were arguing with me, but then some of my sharp-eyed fans got in on this, and they went to Company's House, And here's the actual proof, so a certificate of incorporation, change of name. They were called Interseed 539 Limited. They didn't do so well, did it, when they were called? Do you want some Interseed 539s, mate? They're very crunchy. Some have they changed or have I? Having, by special resolution, changed its name, is now incorporated under the name of the Kettle Crisp Company Limited. 1988. Then they changed their name to Kettle Foods. And thank you to the, whoever it was. They not only went and copied that up for me from Company's House, but bought me a pack of Kettle Crisps. Oh, damn, they nearly got me. Nearly did it. So, yeah, I've been on tour this week. And actually, I'm on tour at the moment, people at home. I'm trying to trap the people who skip through the introduction bit here. But they usually skip through this bit as well, to be fair, which they'll be annoyed about because I've written something this week. I'm coming up this week, if you're listening to it this week, if you're listening or watching it in another week, these gigs won't be going. I'm in St Albans, Banbury in Cardiff, and I'm in the big room in Cardiff. I've just been bumped up to the big room because this is it. Here I come. I'm on Dave Channel at 11 o'clock on Wednesday night. It's coming. I'm back. And I'm definitely 50 years old, if I didn't read, because last week I realised I put my underpants on back to front. So the back was at the front. They went inside out, they were back to front, which could possibly happen to someone under 50. Probably not, but probably you're going to be over 50 that to happen. But then I couldn't be bothered to take off my shoes and trousers and put them on the right way around again. So I just spent the rest of the day in back to front pants, including I did a whole gig in Sutton Coldfield with my pants on back to front. And I got, because I think you just get a certain level of laziness. It's the kind of commitment to laziness only someone in their 50s could have. I got back to the hotel room and I slept in my pants. I'd taken them off the rest of my clothes and I still didn't put them on the right way around. As a 50-year-old, I'm kind of very interested in pant etiquette because I've got quite a lot of old pairs of pants and I find it very hard to throw them away. And I know a lot of these pants are at least 10 years old. They predate my relationship with my wife. And on days when I'm not doing anything important, I wear my old pants in the hope I can wear them out so I can then throw them away. But they won't wear out, so I have to keep wearing them. It's the kind of thing only a 50-year-old man could do. Is that all I've got? God, that was... Is that right? I've got another thing. Is that it? Fucking hell. That's all I wrote down. I thought I'd written loads. I do have some more. I also bought a pack of licorice all sorts for the tour. I know this is what I was going through. And three tour dates. And that's the kind of thing only a 50-year-old man would do. And I like all licorice all sorts, apart from the coconut ones, right, which are disgusting. Everyone agrees with that. No one likes those. Everyone likes the one with the little bubbles, the aniseed ones, right? That's everyone's favourite one. And I said that I know I'll eat these within 30 minutes, even though I've bought them for the 3 days. But, and I said, except for the coconut ones, I tweeted that. And I started the journey, opened up, they're all coconut. I had 14 coconut ones. And I tweeted Bertie Bassett. And I said, what the fuck's going on? And I called Bertie Bassett a cunt. And he hasn't got back to me. No one likes the coconut ones. Cheer if you like the coconut. I mean, no one likes licorice all sorts. You are all under 20. You don't know what I'm talking about. Send me some free licorice all sorts, Bertie Bassett. Wanker. Good. I've got something written for next week. I thought I had more. Anyway, let's crack. I was very excited about how I'd written a routine and... Oh, no, I haven't. Must have just got bored. Anyway, my guests this week are probably best known for their two separate appearances on Rich Chang's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Will you please welcome John Robbins and Ellis Jones? There they are. Oh. Do you have a way that you always... That's a way round you always sit?
Yeah, actually, yes.
Yes, is this the way round you always sit?
He's always on my left.
Yeah.
Nailed it this time.
You've got much better chairs than last time.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Yeah. I thought you both sat in the old chairs, and here's the new chairs.
The old energy deal paying off.
And the beer, and I see you're enjoying a beer 52 beer right there.
Yeah, well, it's your producer Ben asked me if I wanted a drink, and I said, do they have any sort of nice beers? And they said, we've got like 8 different ones on stage, and that's just the best news.
You can have as many as you like. You have to leave some for next week for Danielle Ward. That's all.
They only send you 8.
They send us 8 a week.
Do they?
Well, they have to the 2 weeks we've done it, yeah.
Christ, you are sorted for beer and electricity.
And they, yeah, it's going well.
Pepper. Has that got pepper in it? Cress.
Yeah, cress. I made a big deal about that last week. I love cruciferous vegetables.
That was a thing, wasn't it, on Fist of Fun?
So I have actually ended up advertising cress in real life.
Oh, man.
That's quite a nice one. Not to say some of them aren't. Not to say you're taking sort of
some
Russian,
of them are
not to
absolutely
say that some
awful.
Of them are horrible.
You're not taking Russian roulette with
cress.
That's 7% and it's got like hemp in it.
Do you know about beer? You guys know a little bit about beer.
Yeah, just a bit, mate.
Do you want a beer?
No, although I'm very interested in your Swiss Army knife.
Thank you. It's not mine.
Oh, isn't it?
No, I think it's Kinga's Swiss Army knife.
8%? Are you out of your mind? Are you trying to commit a sex crime?
How many percents is this one? Because I've got to drive later. I'm going to be in trouble. 3.8%. That's all
right. Well, I want that one.
I've spat it a bit, but you can have it.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Good, but this is working out very well, talking about beer. I'm also on tour at richchain.com/gigs. Take that, you fuckers. You thought you could fast forward through, didn't you, to the interview? You're going to have to put, 7 minutes 40 when they come on and then skip through 7:48 to 7:57.
But people will do that.
They will.
Yeah.
Then I block them and they are never allowed to comment again. So that is, do it once, enjoy yourself.
I'm also on tour. This is my night off from touring.
Yes, thanks for coming down.
So you're welcome, mate.
How's it going, the tour? I think, did it win any awards? Your show? I can't remember.
I asked you not to mention it. The tour has won no awards.
Okay.
Perhaps for, as of yesterday, the worst functioning alternator on the A34, because I broke down before my gig, car-wise.
Okay.
He'll
still get a fucking show out of it, I'll tell you this.
Yeah.
So I had to. I got towed to a garage in Oxford, and luckily I have some contacts amongst the undergraduates at Brasenose College.
Despite being 35 years of age,
so they put me up in a guest room, and I.
Why is creepy Uncle John?
And I sat and wrote a Philip Larkin poem in the visitor's book whilst drinking beer at 1 a.m. and it was pure happiness.
Yeah. And yet John is not a character act. So the character
I'd never be cheap enough to use that as an excuse.
You've had quite a time. You were in New York and you got snowed into New York, is that right? Were you gigging then?
Yeah, no, we weren't gigging. We went on holiday with fellow comedian friends.
That's weird, isn't it? It's a weird way to behave, isn't it?
What, going on holiday with friends?
I wasn't there, no. I will not get on.
No.
Well, that's the thing, that's the difference.
Our generation like each other.
No, yeah. You can't go... Yeah. Can't socialise together.
It wasn't really being snowed in. It snowed a great deal on the day we were meant to fly out, so we just basically had a longer holiday, which was as wonderful as it sounds.
Is it nice?
Yeah.
Who was there with you?
Ed Gamble.
Oh, yeah, I know him.
James Acaster.
He's good. I like him.
Yeah. Why didn't you say that about Ed?
It's because he knows Ed's here tonight. And Lloyd Langford.
Oh, yeah.
What?
Is my second favourite Welsh comedian.
Have you had Lloyd on Rehearsal Apart?
Yeah, no, I do love Lloyd.
Lloyd would be phenomenal value.
Yeah.
Not that he's cheap, but he's just such a funny guy.
Yeah, I can.
And a lovely man, a wonderful, charming, soft man.
Here we go. Here come the tears. I can. When you work very closely with someone, you can sense it.
So how did you feel about him winning this? I mean, sort of winning. He had to share it. Yeah. So sort of put you
down on my list of people who've made that joke.
Takes the shine off it a little bit. Because you were the successful one, really, weren't you? And then he's come on and...
Were?
Yeah. Now he's won an award now. What have you got?
Yeah, he's making up for lost time. But I'm very, very proud of him. Not genuinely not bothered.
Are you proud?
I mean, I was... pleased for him. I didn't find out. I'll go.
I've actually got a screen grab of your reaction on my phone.
Have you?
Yeah.
What was my reaction?
Yeah!
That was exactly that noise that you make.
With loads of E's.
Yep.
I was on loads of E.
Good. So you guys like each other then?
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't pretend we don't.
Do you think in the future you might not like each other? And what do you think? What's the thing that will drive you apart, do you think?
I cannot imagine anything. And we've discussed everything that could possibly tear us apart.
Yeah.
But it just never rings true. Mm. Because and I am now just explaining our story. I'm not making comment on anything else. Because we began as stand-ups in our own right, we always have that to go. So we're sort of... We turned into a double act late in life. So we will go away and do other things. And it's not like if Ellis... When Ellis is on a program with another English comedian touring around Wales... In a vehicle that you might think was absolutely perfect for us. That causes no bitterness. Because I am more than happy to watch the first 10 seconds of it on iPlayer and think, yeah, fair enough.
The other thing... I realised quite recently, John sent me a video of the two of us larking around in his flat in Bristol in about 2009. And at the time, our lives were very, very similar.
No, you'd moved to London and I was...
No, I hadn't. No, not in 2009 I hadn't.
Hadn't you?
No.
I think that was...
Staying.
This could be it. This is the moment.
I would have been living in Cardiff, and I can tell by the coat I was wearing.
Was it made of seaweed? As everything.
And I would have been doing the Comedy Box in Bristol. Whenever I did that gig, which I did a lot, I would stay at your house. And we were just circuit stand-ups at the time. Our lives were very similar, but now our lives are quite different.
They are.
And yet we're still, you know, as friendly. The thing that really made me laugh about that video is when we watched it, you only really laughed at the funny stuff you said.
He's a funny guy.
But in that,
this John guy's a funny guy.
But in that video, you were the victim.
Yeah.
And I was the perpetrator.
Yeah.
So I made Ellis have a very hot sauce in my flat.
100% pain.
It's called 100% pain. And I knew it would ruin his evening, and I...
And my morning.
And I thoroughly enjoyed watching that play out. So I sort of took a sort of, I would say, borderline vindictive glee in your state.
Yeah.
Because I knew how hot it was.
But since then, I've increased my tolerance for spicy food.
Yeah,
we talked about this on the Radio X show. I undertook... a year-long endeavour known as Project Spice, where I started off very small.
Yeah.
I was putting mustard on ham.
English mustard?
Yeah, English mustard. I was eating ginger biscuits. And I moved up to Vindaloo. I got from ginger biscuits to Vindaloo in the space of about 12 months.
That's how you meant to get... That's how you become invulnerable to poison, isn't it? You just eat a bit of the poison.
Yeah. So,
and then
became immune to it. I suffered from something known as Welshman's inclination, where I would always go for the simple dish.
Yeah. Cheese on toast.
Absolutely. Yeah. I wouldn't even rare-bit it up.
No.
Because that involves mustard. It was classic cheese on toast. Yeah, okay. The Dutch model. but John will have spicy food on anything, so and everything. So
spicy food on anything.
No, I mean,
well, What am I prone to put spicy food on?
You put it on top of the spicy food. You have something.
No, he will put he will put Tabasco and hotter things.
Well, enjoy it while you're young, lads. That's all I'm saying. I used to be the same. It gets harder as you get older to weather that storm.
I think I don't mind the storm. I live alone.
That's true, because he often texts me from the eye of the storm.
For me, it's the equivalent of an office worker's fag break. Just gives you something to do.
Oh, just a sort of release from your own thoughts for the torrid minutes in the toilet.
As you get older, and I find I'm either hard to sleep anyway, as you know, we have young children, but as I get older, like anything now will make me wake up. So if I eat spicy food in the day, I'll wake up in the night because of the spicy food. So that's what I'm talking about. That's just the annoyance. So if I drink a glass of whiskey, I'll wake up in the middle of the night going, oh. I still drink the whiskey, though, just in the hope that it won't happen next time. I'll ask you my new emergency question. How do you decide when it's time to retire a pair of pants?
I stopped Izzy from tweeting a picture of my pants this afternoon, in fact, because I've had the same pair of Slazenger boxer shorts probably since before Tony Blair was Prime Minister. And they're all torn along the gusset.
Right, yeah, that's...
The gusset is essentially unsustainable. And she said, you should really throw these out. Can I put a picture of them on Twitter? I said, no, because I want you to maintain a semblance of dignity in this relationship. So I will not retire pants.
No.
We've discussed my pant retiring on the show, haven't we?
Yeah.
You remember my humble brag? So I have a...
huge cock. And he's not afraid to use it against me. That's just...
I have a problem that manifests itself in every pair of pants I've ever owned,
okay,
whereby I will use my left hand to pop myself back in through my left pocket. So the boxers tear a hole, they wear through, where eventually one day it'll just rip.
Around the kneecap. No,
I'm not in Blink 182. And about half of my boxers have got a tear on the left trunk leg.
Yeah.
But I don't retire them.
No.
I am actually planning to buy some boxers soon. Be the first time in a couple of years.
Well, yeah. I've got a lot of pairs of Calvin Klein black boxer shorts, and I know I haven't bought those for 8 or 9 years. I've moved over to a new pant. Diesel, usually, I think.
Yeah.
I now went to sort of more of a brief than a boxer short.
I've never worn briefs.
Yeah,
I bought some.
They don't fit me, but that's not the reason. I'm trying to wear the Calvin Klein ones down. I think once they've gone, I'll allow a little hole to be in them.
I have a tactic with socks, whereby when they wear away at the heel or the toe, because I'm so thrifty with myself, I will force myself to get into a mood whereby, without thinking about whether I should retire them, I tear them.
Yes.
And then, like, you can't do anything now. You've done it. It's too late.
Yeah.
They're gone. And you throw them in the bin.
I do that.
I bought a pair of Ben Sherman boxer shorts, size small, that were too tight.
Okay.
And I was absolutely thrilled. They're unwearable. And I'm so pleased.
It's interesting. It's interesting because, you know, I could just throw them. They've served their purpose, all these
My mother uses my dad's old pants as dusters.
Yeah, well, I think that's what our parents' generation did.
Yeah. Classic.
So glad you said dusters. could have been anything worse, couldn't it?
Yeah, I remember my dad's kind of always stringy pants they used to have that would be used to dust the kitchen. However much they've been cleaned.
Yeah,
that's not something.
Just the worktops.
There's still some residue of Keith Haring's feces on there somewhere. Hi, Dad. There would be now. He's 80 now. God. 81. His trousers must be full of feces. So you've got this radio show. It's doing quite well. How did you? So when was the point that you decided to work together? Did it just happen sort of organically, or did you make a conscious decision to say we're going to? Was it the radio show?
So that video Ellis was talking about earlier in Bristol, Ellis then moved to Big London and signed with a hotshot agent, and that. That was the beginning of my spiral down, because like Ellis was doing all this stuff and meeting all these people, and
John was so pleased for me
to an extent. And about 2 years, when did you move to London?
September 2010.
Okay, 4 years later, I moved to London from Bristol. And sort of began about 2 years behind Ellis doing a lot of the stuff he'd been doing to get gigs and get seen by people. And then I, in a last ditch, desperate, I'd emailed every agent and they'd all not replied. I didn't even get rejections, which is quite good. I'd rather they didn't reply. Yeah.
Because despite his undoubted talent, John is difficult to work with. I don't... And his reputation precedes him.
At the time. Not anymore.
At the time.
I have made changes.
Yeah, you went on a charm offensive.
How did that manifest itself? You were difficult to work. Well, in what way was he difficult to work with? I've heard you say you had to defend. You'd have to go, no, John's okay if you know him.
There's a very big. At Edinburgh in about 2012, there's a very big PR person who does PR for a lot of comedians, who you would know of, and she was doing my PR, and she had rejected John, and John had had a bad gig earlier in the day and had got
but explain how the rejection manifested itself. She walked out of my show after 5 minutes, and I saw it happen, and my heart burst into 1,000 pieces.
Yes. Yeah. This is the kind of emotional heft John uses in his Edinburgh shows.
I'm overstating.
But anyway, so she said that she wouldn't do John's PR. And John had had a bad gig earlier.
She said, and I quote, not my cup of tea.
Yeah, I'm coming to that.
As she was walking out.
But John...
She texted Daryl. My agent was Daryl. That's where I was. My agent was known by his first name. Never a good sign.
But she came. This person came to my Edinburgh show, and John was drunk, and he'd come to my show because he wanted to go for a drink with me and have a chat. And then he spotted this person, and he just followed her around the Pleasance courtyard, going, "Not my cup of tea, not 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 my cup of tea. I'm not my cup of tea." Not my cup of tea. For fucking ages.
Which, considering how important she is a baller move.
Yeah. But he was full of these baller moves.
That's a very good way of describing it.
He was all baller move as an open spot. And then because John is friends with people like Russell Howard and John Richardson, you'd have this baller move open spot doing baller moves in front of people. And then people were scared of you. I'll never forget that. Not my cup of tea, not my cup of tea. Come here.
I then moved to London. I humbled myself. Yeah. And just basically started from scratch and realised that all of the things I was angry about were all my fault and not anybody else's fault. And I think a lot of comedians go through that phase where you're sort of blaming absolutely everyone else, and then you eventually there's one person left who might be in control. And you think, oh, it's probably me.
Yeah.
I'm proud to say that between 2013 and 2015, that very lady represented me for PR.
Yes, she came round. She had a cup of John's tea.
But everyone remembered this incident so much. They're going, but didn't you say it wasn't your cup of tea?
But then John signed with my agent, and when our agent asked us what we'd like to do, we said we'd love to do a radio show together. And then right. Radio X...
I remember the conversation I had with you. I was in a BP garage on my way to Southampton, and I pulled over and spoke to you for an hour, and it was great, because I was running an hour early, as per... And I said we should tap up Six Music.
Yeah,
that then, didn't work out. But so,
but XFM as it was then had comedians in their Sunday 10-1 slot. So they'd had Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant, Jimmy Carr, Russell Brand had done it, Josh Widdicombe had done it, and Adam and Joe obviously. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to start that back up again. So they gave auditions to five or six different double acts,
right.
And crucially, we didn't know they other people were getting auditioned, did we?
Yeah,
we thought we were just making a pilot for them. But I think if we'd known other people were doing it too, we'd have got too nervous and probably messed it up.
Yeah, so they asked a few other people, and then they gave us a show, and so that was in
2012.
Yeah, and then 2014.
No, 2014.
2014 was when the show started.
Right. And it's becoming, like, it's phenomenally successful, and it's kind of interesting because with this show, when I put the guest names up, you know, sometimes it'll take a while for them to sell, and sometimes someone will surprise themselves very quickly. Like, Limmy was the quickest selling person ever, and I wasn't sure whether Limmy in London would sell, but it was like, bang, the minute we put it up, it was the last show.
The Scottish diaspora.
Yeah. But similarly, you, I mean, this is testament. All these people are here to see you. Well, they don't know who I am, so... Hey, when I said hello, there was nothing. I think one person. Don't even know what's going on. So you've got this kind of incredible fan base, and you know that you've built up by doing this show just for 3 or 4 years. Then, do you think, or do you think it's I mean, you've done it on the road. You've done, you know,
yes,
you've done some live gigs.
We toured it between October and December 2016, and it did take us by surprise, I think, because we did the Shepherd's Bush Empire, and I thought that was a silly booking initially, but then, you know, that sold out, and then we did a few other ones in London as well. And it's the exciting thing is what I always say, but whenever I meet people who listen to the show, whenever they come up to me after a gig or something, they're always how I hoped fans of ours would be if we ever were to have fans.
Well, they're like us. But
yeah, yeah.
Okay. So that will turn out you saved that. Yeah. I was wondering where it's going.
I think you have to be very, very careful to sort of nurture that.
Yeah, yeah.
That relationship, and I think that the relationship I have had with podcasts and radio shows in the past is incredibly intimate, and I'm very conscious of that when we have interaction, like people email in, people sort of come up to you after gigs and message you on various media, because I remember what it was like to be a fan of Adam and Joe, and to be, and like listening to, like if I met Mark Kermode, I think I would melt. I want him to be my best friend, sorry. Like, so much. It's almost too much.
Yeah.
So I am very conscious of that, because you have a relationship with your audience, as you do, when you have a podcast or a radio show, where they choose when they listen. So it's not like a TV program where it's on in the background or it'd be on while you're making tea. It's specifically you're choosing a time where you can give it your full attention, whether that's either on a commute or while you're driving or you're at the gym or whatever. But we're very, very lucky in that people have us in their lives at the point where they're most relaxed or they most need distracting or they most need to have a laugh.
Yeah.
And I think... So Ellis hasn't actually toured in English since we started the show, have you?
No.
But I've noticed since I've done two tours since we've had sort of relative success with the radio show, and you become incredibly protective of your audience because you are aware of the way they've come to you, and how much it means to them and how much it means to you as well. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know.
Well, I think it's what I was listening to. I thought I should listen to one of your shows today. I did about 10 minutes. It was all right. Just some blokes talking. Rubbish. But it was nice. You started off talking about like some, you know, giving advice to a 14-year-old person who'd written in and said they were going to see gigs with their parents, and you know, and but you were very, you know, avuncular and friendly.
Yeah,
which is the right, you know, in a really caring and nice way. Some people would have taken the piss, or some people would have not bothered reading the email out, I guess. But it was a nice email.
I'm not bothered by that. I'm not frightened by that stuff because no. I think being 14 must have had a profound effect on me, because I remember exactly how that felt.
Yeah.
And I was absolutely obsessed with a few bands.
Yeah.
And I've met comedians in the past who were famous and didn't have, and had lots of fans, but they a few of them weren't particularly into music or comedy or football, and they'd never really obsessed over something, and they were quite baffled by it.
Yeah.
But when I was, there was a Welsh band called Gorky Zygotic Monkey, and I genuinely thought they offered answers to a global problem.
a global problem only raised in Wales.
Yeah. And I still listen to those records. Yeah. I was driving back from a gig last night, actually, and I was listening to the Gorkies, and it still makes me feel like I did when I was 15. And I got to know Eros Childs, the lead singer, a bit. And I saw him before a
Tell
football...
him about the...
No. But I saw him before a...
Tell tell him how close you got to him.
No. It's quite a long anecdote.
It's fine, we've got all the time in the world.
I used to organise minibuses.
He won't tell it on air. In case Eros hears.
Yeah. Can I?
This is going to be the Stephen Fry killing himself moment.
I own his GCSE art coursework.
How did you come to own it?
Because... because... the Gorkies happened to go to my school. They were in the sixth form and I was in the first year. And when they left, a bigger boy in my year found it behind a cupboard in the art room and sold it to me at an exorbitant rate. Which meant that I didn't have school dinners for about 3 months, right? So I now own the artwork. And I used to organise minibus trips to the gigs.
The amazing thing is, the only value of that artwork you've invested in was if you were to sell it to yourself. You're the only person who would pay more than you paid for it in like 1992. Oh,
and my mum worked with his mum, and one of his girlfriends happened to be best friends with my first girlfriend, because Wales is that small. I hadn't engineered that. So I was already, they already kind of knew me, I think, because I was turning up at the gigs, and I think they might have remembered me at... from school, but I would always stand right in the front row centre, just sort of staring like that, you know, willing these answers to come. I would say I had a kind of relationship with the band, in that a very one-sided relationship.
Yeah.
And then I used to go to a lot of the gigs and all that kind of thing. And then I remember I turned up at one gig and his girlfriend was there and she went, "Hey, Elias." And he was like, "Oh my God, he knows my fucking girlfriend." And then I turned up another gig and his mum...
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra.
and UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Was there, and obviously I recognised her because she was friends with my mum, and she went, oh, hello, Ellis. She was like, he's now friends with my mother. How does he do this? So I had access to his mother and I had access to his then girlfriend as well as his Archie coursework. I was going to a lot of the gigs, and then I, this is coincidence because Cardiff's a very small city. I happened to get a job in his local. So then, you know, he'd come in after band practice, and I'd be there cleaning glasses, looking like a sociopath. And then the band split up, and I thought, right, I really need to chill out about this because I'm a grown up, I'm an adult, and then. I would have been in my mid-20s. My then girlfriend was asked to DJ at the Biennale Arts Festival in Venice. So I went out because it was free tickets. And it was, you know, I'd never been to Venice before. And she was staying in this flat. They were putting us up. But she was DJing at the after party. But to open the event, Eros was doing a solo set. And because they were both performers, we were essentially, well, we were put up in the same flat, which meant that I basically went on a romantic holiday with him, but sort of against his wishes. And I would have been about 26, right? So I was like, right, chill out. You're normal. You're so normal now. So on the first night we went out, we had a meal and we had wine and we talked about music and politics. It was great. And the second night, the same thing. Then the third night was the night of the gig. But it was a free bar, so I took a very Welsh approach to the free bar. Pissed at a canal like an absolute legend. And then I got really drunk, and he'd had a drink as well. And I said, "Oh, it reminds me actually of a review you had in the Independent when Gorky 5 was released in 1998, and I actually give you 3 stars, which I thought was a bit unfair because they said you were the best undiscovered British pop band in the last 20 years. You mean it was that was in the Guardian? I went, no, it's in the Independent. And he went, no, it was the Guardian. I went, it was the fucking Independent, mate, actually. And he went, no, I remember that review. I went, well, I've got it in it. Scrapbook, and then it like all came out. In 1994, you performed Anna Apra on Video Now, which was a program that lasted 3 seasons. And I don't think he remembers much of it.
You can see why the distance of Freddie Mercury is quite a useful thing to. Yeah. But I think what Ellis is saying is...
Section me.
When a 14-year-old emails you to say, I feel awkward about going to gigs with my parents, why wouldn't you be nice?
Yes.
Because we've been that person.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, Ellis may be a different kind of person. But it's... it's very important to remember. I see myself in those emails and those people, and yeah. I think Ellis does too. Yeah. And I think you attract, fingers crossed, the sorts of people who are like you.
Yeah,
yeah. And because you talk about those kinds of memories, you end up appealing to people like you as well, and it becomes a self-fulfilling sort of
prophecy. Yeah, and that's why it's really cool that on the radio show and the podcast as a result, because we're ourselves, you can kind of... You get reactions to what you do and who you are, whereas we're not pretending to be anything we're not. So if you had this... If we'd started off with, like, a persona... Or a set kind of character dynamic. That
you're listening to XFM. It's Ellis James. John yeah. Robbins here. We got plenty of absolute top bangers.
I mean, we do say that, but not in that voice. But you would then have to sort of maintain this ludicrous facade, and the interaction you had with people that listened wouldn't connect with you. Whereas because it's just us chatting like we used to on the phone every week for an hour.
Yeah.
When people latch onto that or like stuff we've said or feel a connection to us, it's actually a connection to us.
Yeah.
So you're not, there's no sort of like, oh, I've got another email about that bloody thing you said that you didn't mean.
Yeah.
So it's fine. It's kind of, yeah. It's easy. It's yeah. very easy.
No, it's not, I think it's more like, me and Stuart were on the radio and then on the BBC Two. But in those days, we were about the first TV show to have an email address, but hardly anyone emailed you. But people would write to us, and then people would write to us quite regularly as well. Some of them I now know as adults. And one of them is my wife's best friend. That's quite weird. She's very lovely. But, you know, we went through exactly the same thing. And both, having been, Stu was a big fan of music and I was a big fan of comedy. And so we both had that exact... But it's that responsibility. But then also, does it ever spill over and, you know, you get some people who maybe take it too far, that... The relationship, or do you always manage to keep it within?
Not yet. I mean, sometimes because sort of accidentally we talk about like, well, I guess that what's great about being with Ellis, and right from the start, it's the case that if I've had a, or Ellis has had a bad week or a bad time, we talk about that in a funny way.
Yeah.
And what's great is having Ellis to sort of burst my either pompous balloon or my sad balloon
yeah.
with his Welsh pin.
When you did a long interview in the Daily Telegraph quite recently to promote your tour, and it's the quote at the end was something like, Robbins's intellectualism is undercut... by James's Welshness. The idea that they are mutually exclusive.
But also that Welshness is a personality trait.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then, because it's with Ellis, I was always, from the start, comfortable of Ellis say, how are you, John? I'll be like, I've had an absolute mess.
But yeah, yes. If I'd done quite a bit of radio before and John hadn't, and the rule is you don't say that. But no one had told John. So early on, you know, like I would say, it's Sunday morning, you're listening to Ellis James and John Robbins on Radio X. How are you, John?
Awful.
And yes. Oh, and then, whereas, you know, I had been trained, because I'd done a lot of radio, especially in Wales, and I'd been trained not to do that.
Yeah.
And then it connects with people, but you kind of, well, it's quite obvious why, but you are breaking a showbiz rule.
Yeah.
But so when
we literally would say, awful, 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 awful. And producer Dave would say, you know, that we'd play a track and you go, come on, John. You want people to keep listening.
But so when, because as Ellis has very eloquently described that's an unusual thing to hear on commercial digital indie radio. Yeah. When people then do contact the show, they tell stories about their own lives and their own struggles, and you, it's not like it's too much, because a lot of the time you don't read it out and they say, please don't read out this email, I just want to...
We reply to lots.
Yeah, well, you reply to a lot.
Because... But I reply because...
Because I only check them on a Saturday when I come in, whereas you check them in the week.
As opposed to letters, it's obviously easier to reply to emails.
Yeah, but also much easier. It's, that's one of the great things about email.
But then it's
Yeah, I mean, you won't know why they made that noise. I think because, Richard, an email... is a letter you can send in a second. Yeah. It's the 1 second post.
Yeah. But the problem
inconceivable
is...
Inconceivable in 2005.
The problem is...
In 2005, Richard, if you told me I could send a letter in a second,
I would have spat
on the floor.
The problem is that the response can take a second as well. So like you can, if you get into like the kind of... correspondence we used to get to in the 1990s, at least that was spread over several weeks.
Yeah.
You could be replying and then reply and then reply and then reply.
Oh, actually, no. Well, we've never ever, I don't think, ever had a...
No, it's never gone into an email discussion. We've had some pretty moving emails, actually,
sure.
And have replied to them. But the person has never then thought, oh, great, this is now an open dialogue. Mm-hmm. I've had a couple of tweeted responses saying, oh, thank you for replying to my email. But I respond to those emails, as John said, because he checks them on the Saturday. He chooses which ones we read out, and I check them in the week. And in the same way that if someone came up to me in a pub and poured their heart out, I would listen to them. It's just a human response. It's not, you know, I'm not particularly...
But also, we've both met our heroes. I've met Brian May 4 times.
Yeah.
And I think perhaps more than anyone else I know have brought a great deal to those meetings. And never have I thought, and God, please do not think I am putting myself at the same level as Brian May right now. That could not be further from the truth. However, I've known, going into those interactions with May, after careful planning, after running through various scenarios in my head, acting them out at home, prepping, making notes, etc. Like, there are certain things I want to say to him and I want to communicate him. Those have to be edited drastically. And I'm not expecting...
Cover me with your hair.
No. One of the greatest crimes committed in the 20th and 21st century was reducing Brian May to his hair, Ellis. And you've fallen foul of that on a number of occasions. But I have access to May in a way that I wouldn't have dreamed of as a child.
Well, we have the same agent. Sort of.
Well, we have a way of going through the back door. I've made use of that on three occasions. Once we met him in a professional sense as equals. But but I would never. I think what I'm trying to say is, A, I love Brian May. B. All I've ever said to him, apart from when we interviewed him, where I got some deep cuts out, is, hey, I love what you do, nice to meet you. Because I can't say any more than that. I can't say, can you want to come back to my house? And I think, so I, a lot of the...
I can make you love me.
But I don't think people do want any more than to be able to express something, or this story reminded me of this thing. If you like this band, you might like this band. That story you told, I really liked. People don't then actually want you to begin some kind of mad correspondence, I think is what I'm trying to say. I'm sorry, all I can see now is Brian May.
It sounds like you two are madder than anyone who would write to you, so they're probably
going,
oh, fuck, better back off. These guys are getting a bit needy.
That
was in Venice. This guy.
Jesus Christ, they're real.
I think, Richard, by having only listened to 10 minutes of one of our podcasts, you've cut to the core of what it is.
And you're on the same station as Johnny Vaughan. You've stood in for Johnny Vaughan on a few occasions. Is he critical of your breakfast choices?
I don't. Is that what's that in reference to?
He did an advert for his radio. No, he did an advert for a breakfast biscuit, where Lisa, I think it was Lisa Snowden, I think was the woman.
Did
in
he?
It.
When was
she
this?
Was eating? She was eating a breakfast biscuit, and Johnny Vaughan went, biscuits for breakfast. What's next? Marmalade for lunch, which you know is a perfectly adequate choice for. I mean, a marmalade for lunch isn't that weird, is it?
No.
I mean, on its own, but you know, even a lighter spoonful of marmalade for lunch, that'd be okay. But it seemed overly critical of breakfast biscuits.
I love Johnny Vaughan.
Yeah, okay.
Because he was on the telly when I was growing up, but I really liked a lot of the stuff he did. And now I know him, and he is exactly how you imagine he will be. And we were talking about. We were at the Radio X Christmas party, and he was talking at me about how how I think Adidas and Puma were two brothers, and the company split.
Yes, and Rudolph and Adolf Dassler.
Yeah, and I think that's true of two of the big German car companies, Audi and Mercedes, I think. I can't remember. And I think it's also true of Aldi and Lidl. Hmm. And he reeled off a load of these... He reeled off a load of these examples.
Yeah.
And then went, because Germany's the fatherland. It's the fatherland. You're always trying to impress your father. That's the thing. You're obsessed with impressing your father. With Britain and England. It's pathetic. We're a motherland. Oh, we love our mums. We love our mums. It's pathetic.
And then he talked at me. He had this long theory about it. And I went, really? And he went, I don't know. It could be bollocks, but it's entertaining, isn't it?
I only really think about Johnny Vaughan in the shower.
Yes. Yes. A lot of people now, when they're having showers, only think of you thinking of Johnny Vaughan. We did discuss this on the last one. Oh, dear. Good.
I now think of John thinking of Johnny Vaughan when I'm in the shower.
You think of me in the shower.
Yes, yes.
Whenever I think of any of the things I think about, I then think about you. Thinking about Johnny Vaughan in the shower. So whenever I look over my shoulder when I'm driving to check when I'm going to pull out, I think of my ex-girlfriend who always used to do that, and then I think of you in the shower thinking of Johnny Vaughan. Every single time I do that now. Celebrity mastermind? Want to... I know what it is to lose Celebrity Mastermind, admittedly, from a position of 34 points.
What's the
highest
question?
Ever score on Celebrity Mastermind was by someone doing questions about Queen.
Yeah, but they got asked more questions. No, that was the format was different.
Leave it, John. Leave it.
Okay, calm down. Can everyone please calm down? So they changed the format, and I asked the producer, and it's correct. He got 2 minutes on Queen. I got 1 minute on Queen.
John Humphreys in his ivory tower.
So you cannot compare the two.
Yeah.
They actually asked me one of the same questions they asked him.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Fun fact.
Weak. Tim Farron. Because it's Tim Farron who beat you?
Yep.
The ex-liberal, the gay-hating...
Yeah, he
quit. Do it for the gays, John, for God's sake.
Well, it was a double victory for Farron, because my topic was Queen. I actually start my tour show with a sort of a routine about Celebrity Mastermind now, in which I leave no stone unturned when it comes to Farron's sexual politics. But it was... I was absolutely devastated. Yeah. I was
perfectly happy to be devastated on a radio show.
One question I got wrong. The question about who directed Bohemian Rhapsody, I probably would have got if I'd thought for a minute. But they say to you, just pass if you don't know, because you haven't got time.
Mate, you only have a minute.
Yeah, I only had a minute.
For a minute, that would have just been it.
Reese Thomas, whoever it was, had 2 minutes. The question about Thin Lizzy will... That will be the last thought I have on Earth, so how's... Fine, great. But it actually will.
Yeah.
I'm not joking. That will be what I think about when my family are holding my hands playing Astral Weeks.
But, you know...
I will think, yeah, Thin
John,
Lizzy.
John, that's still only...
Darling,
that's still
I'm
only,
ready. Thin Lizzy, oh! John,
that's still only 2 points. He beat you by 4 points.
Mate. He got asked more general knowledge questions than me.
Because he answered them quicker.
No, because the questions were shorter. I mean, I could... I could talk about this all night. I have a suspicion, Richard, if you really want to go into detail, I have a suspicion that to secure Farron, who without doubt was the headline celebrity, he was given assurances about the standard and length of questions. I mean, one of his questions was, which striker completed the lineup for Blackburn Rovers known as SAS? And you're like, well, fuck, I know that! He did... Some of my questions about Queen were very interesting, but quite deep. Ellis, how many of Tim Farron's questions did you get right as just a general football fan?
I got 4 out of 10.
So then, why? I should have picked Queen in 1991. He picked Blackburn Rovers in the 90s. Well, just have the courage of your convictions.
You lost by 4 points, but I lost by 1 point. They let Hillary Kay go on for an...
What was their specialist subject?
She did pottery. She'd wed for pottery. She's an antique. She's an antiques roadshow host.
Fair enough.
She told me I couldn't do...
She didn't do pottery in the 90s, did she?
She did Wedgwood, which is her expertise, so it's just like...
She didn't do Wedgwood in the 1790s.
You
come
did
on, Farron, strap on a pair and then hate them.
You did something about your face. You did something about your favourite band. You have to do anything. No work. I had to read 2 books, learn stuff in a language I didn't know.
2 books?
Yeah. Big
books. Do you know how many Queen books I've read?
I got 34 points and I still lost.
Yeah, but you... I cannot... Why? I don't want to talk about it. It means too much. I'm too sad about it, Richard.
They forgot to press the buzzer for Hillary Kay. So she actually got to about 40, and I was counting.
Oh, right. That's insane.
And then they stopped, and then there was this 2 minutes where they obviously rewound the tape to work out where she'd got. They made a mistake on the thing, and that's a bad mistake on Mastermind, right? To let too many questions.
What was your specialist subject?
Mine was Rasputin. That's hard, man. That was hard.
Oh. Well, you
that's a good topic, though. You didn't do Rasputin at age 35, did you?
It was, good. I'm glad you're as upset as I am. Have you ever had a dream about? Have you ever dream about Celebrity Mastermind stuff? I've had a dream where it was taking place in a very muddy field, and every time I walked to the chair, it was like having to wade through waist high mud. don't know what that means.
In all honesty, though, I was personally gutted because you're doing it for charity, and because the charity I was doing it for, I was really stoked to be able to raise them some money. I was doing it for, to plug them, please, if that's okay.
Yes.
Standing Together Against Domestic Violence, that do wonderful work in London with various different projects supporting victims of domestic violence abuse. There's a limit to how angry you can be that you've been beaten, because at the end of the day, their name is being said on TV and they're earning a little bit of money, but hopefully it's raising awareness for them. So you kind of think, it doesn't matter.
I mean, if you'd attacked Tim Farron, that would probably have had a negative effect on it.
That is the first rational thought that's not about an ISA you've ever had.
We all featured in an independent article about couples in comedy. Oh. along with me and my wife, you and Izzy, Justin and Luce Porter, and you and Sarah Pascoe.
I enjoy seeing those photos coming around on Google every so often.
Yeah.
You look so nice in your photo. Izzy and I look like a right pair of twats.
Oh, there's a photo of them. There's a photo of them. I don't know how this arose in the shoot where they're touching each other's nostrils. Yeah, yeah. And they look like two children's TV presenters who are trying to make a comeback after a Coke scandal. Yeah.
That is literally exactly what we look like. Yeah, yeah. And we had, they'd taken, I don't know, 100 normal photos. Yeah, yeah.
That photo shoot was in your house.
It was in my house, yeah.
So me and Sarah had to go to Ellis's front room yeah. and help clear away all of the toys.
Yeah.
Ellis's, not the babies. and then to leave a totally white wall.
Yeah.
And then we had the sort of ludicrous but quite fun shoot where we all sort of jumped around and that sort of thing.
They took 100 normal photos yeah. of Izzy and I and then... The two children's entertainers making a comeback after a Coke scandal photo.
Mr. and Mrs. Theakston.
What's the one the Independent decided to use? And it crops up everywhere.
It really does.
It really does.
But bizarrely featured in an awful lot of my Edinburgh reviews.
Yeah. Well, you've let us down by not having... All the rest of us have had successful relationships and had children. And I see it as a black mark on the reliability of comedians to have successful relationships.
My awards are my children.
You met your wife in Barnstable.
Yeah, how do you know that?
I know everything about you. Just think that's, you know, that's...
I've got, can I... do you want to... Have you got an anecdote about that?
Well, I've got an anecdote about everything. But
have
no,
you got an anecdote about the day you met your wife? Nah. Nah, pretty unremarkable.
Yeah, it's a bit of a blank spot.
Don't remember. She said we met in Barnstable. I don't remember it.
I've got a funny anecdote about Ellis and Illy's early... what did I just say?
Illy. That's fine.
Ellis and Izzy's early days.
Yeah. Go on. Does it...
No, it's not that one.
Okay. Does it paint me in a broadly positive light?
Not in a... No, it's a funny anecdote.
It's neutral. I can call it neutral.
Yeah. It's... No, you tell yours first.
No, go on. It's not that... Now we're very intrigued. So
me and Ellis often discuss how... When you start a relationship with someone, the first couple of months are almost unbearable because you are so attached to them and so you start having mad fantasies about what if they died. You sort of feel incredibly protective. You can't be away from them. You sort of worry if they haven't texted back, that sort of thing. And we often say, don't we, that, and this sounds bleaker than it is, but there is, in a weird way... Say your partner were to die.
Classic Robbins.
In a way, it would be worse for that to happen in the first 2 months than it would after, say, 20 years. Because...
When they leave your children without a mother, yes, that you're right, that would be a...
There are factors, obviously.
Because the hope and the expectation and the future dies as well, and you're in that... place where you're like breathless and your heart's racing and it's just too much, you can't deal with it. So when Ellis and Izzy started going out, you very quickly had to go to Australia for like 4 months.
Yeah, I was doing gigs there. Yeah.
In the heart of that time.
After 3 weeks.
Oh, no.
When it was just everything is like pumping and running and, oh God, I want to be with this person. Then you had to go away for 4 months.
I would be walking around Melbourne or Adelaide and I would see a phone box. I'd think, Izzy probably had phone boxes where she grew up.
Whereas now, you're comfortable to walk past a phone box without thinking about her.
Absolutely.
That is the nub of the issue. You don't have that association anymore.
I would say I was insane in Australia.
Yes. Yeah. So I would, when Ellis was in Australia, I would speak to him probably once a week. And you were there for how long?
4 months. Yeah.
4 months. So we would have sort of a classic weekly hour-long chat. And the same was going on with Izzy, but way more so. You were speaking to her every day, twice a day, three times a day. So we were having one of these conversations about 2 months after he'd been in Australia. And we sort of wrapped up. And he said, can I just say, John, it's very kind of you to spend all this money speaking to me on the phone. That's sort of more Lloyd Langford than you, but I can't actually do you.
Okay.
And I said, no, that's not how phones work. The connection is in Australia and you've got an English phone and I'm making the connection in England, so it's my minute. She went, oh, no. And I said, yeah, this, I mean, I haven't mentioned it before, but this is, you're paying for this phone call. And there was a pause, about 5 or 6 seconds, which I will never forget, that was then followed by, I've got to go. And I know how often he'd been speaking to Izzy. And the incredible thing about this, and this is the absolute polar difference between me and Ellis, he had been offered, on the day he arrived, an Australian phone. And he had said, no, I'll just use my own because it'll be too much hassle to use an Australian phone. And Ellis, how much was your phone bill?
Well, I mean, I don't want to get into details.
It was £1,400.
Yeah! Buy bloody lavender, John! Love. I love her.
And that is Ellis and me.
Yeah.
Chatting together every week. Loving each other's company. One of us has a phenomenal hold on admin. The other one is just fucking vibing it.
Well, I think we might have to wrap up, but someone's excited about that. Oh, just excited about that. I've only asked you one emergency question, so that's quite good. Well done. That's a kind of victory for you. See if there's anything else someone. Oh, this I'll ask you this. If you had to, this is an emergency question especially written for you. If you had to kill John or Josh Widdicombe, but you had to kill one of them, which one would you kill?
I'll take the bullet, mate.
For the survival of the sitcom Josh, I will take that bullet.
You look worryingly like you're going to answer this honestly.
Yeah. I hope he will. Your young fans are listening and they want an honest answer.
I would kill myself, Richard.
But that's not one of
then
the options.
Both of them would die. So you would have all have died. That's obviously the part of that.
You said that was specifically for us. Did someone send that question?
No, I made it up.
It's quite mean.
Well, it's because, you know.
But he doesn't want to kill anyone.
No.
Well, nobody have to.
You are?
It's how he has to kill
one of
you.
What are the circumstances surrounding this?
Whoever has set this up. Has got your wife and family hostage. and they will be sold into slavery. They're not going to die. They'll be fine. They'll be sold into slavery.
I think John would cry more.
Yeah.
Ellis.
And so that
I would cry less. I would be cool with it. Play me Astral Weeks. Tell me not to worry about Thin Lizzy. Say it's going to be painless. Hold my hand.
Okay.
Take down my notes for my gravestone. It's going to run to about 1,000 words.
Your digital gravestone.
You're going to need
scroll.
You're going to need quite the mason to deal with the work. I want to be buried in the graveyard near where I live, where I walk around and imagine what I was like. It would be like if I was a bird in it. Under a tree, near Ruth Ellis, the last woman to be hung in the UK, whose grave is unmarked, but I know where it is. And then just hold the pillow over my face. Make sure Vin's recording it. Because we need a final podcast to go out on. And then you and Josh can continue with series 4.
Then it would be John.
Promise me you'll write an Edinburgh show about this, but only do it in Welsh. Good.
Here's a fun call. If you did an Edinburgh show in Welsh, would that be valid for the Perrier? And well, how would they judge it?
Yeah,
fascinating question.
A friend of mine was a judge a few years ago, and she's a Welsh speaker, so I suppose she would have had to have watched it. And said,
and then convinced 10 other people yeah. It was amazing. You should do that, man.
You would definitely get an audience
every day, a small audience, obviously, but you would, I reckon there are...
I'd come and see it just for the, you know, the
I think there'd be
value.
A lot of that, yeah.
Yeah.
My mum goes to Edinburgh every year, so that's one ticket, guaranteed. And her friend Jill.
Your mum's... Your mum came to see my Edinburgh show with her friend Jill. She was so nice about it.
Oh, she's a big fan of yours, yeah.
She's lovely. And so is my mum.
Yeah.
But she doesn't speak Welsh, so she's never seen
her. She can't go and see your shows.
No.
In a way, it's a stupid thing to do, isn't it? Do shows in Welsh. But
yeah,
in a way.
I would lose about as much money in Edinburgh as you did, Richard. Yeah.
He's fucking funny, isn't he?
Well, I'm glad your friendship has survived, even the murder of one of you by the other. Well done for that. Ladies and gentlemen, John Robbins Erskine! You have been listening to Rich James' Best Square Theatre podcast with me, Rich James, and my guests, Ellis James and John Robbins. They were quite nice young men, weren't they? The music is, as always, by Pess. Thank you to everyone at the British Comedy Guide, everyone at Best Square Theatre, everyone at Sky Potato, everyone at No Fuss Stripe, and all the gang down at Fuss Productions. They're the main ones, that gang. They're a good lot of people. Thank you to my producer, Ben Walker. This is a Fuss Go Faster Stripe and Sky Potato production.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to RichHerring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can. And make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.